Greetings, friends. It's me, Dee Trussell, and on behalf of Darren Fridgley Enterprises, I'd like to remind you that time is an illusion. You're enlightened, and we're both flying over Tibet right now because we're monks having a typical afternoon. Also, on behalf of the Demiurge, I have to remind you that you are not an enlightened monk flying over Tibet right now, but that your experience of life, as dreamlike as it may seem, is actually very, very real. In fact, it's all there is. And now, a song. Today will be the day that I will make the order at the drive-thru. I will have the courage, it's terrible. I will take order of the courage, order some more of the drive. I will drive away with the drive-thru. I will have the drive-thru. I will have the courage, it's time at the drive-thru. I will take order at the door, drive some pizza. I will drive away with you. First off, forgive me if it seems like I'm lagging, but I've never been in a satanic wagon pulled by dragons. And as you can see from the tattoo on my face, I recently became a demon slave. He sits on a smoldering throne, and he makes me eat his ass when he's feeling alone. He also replicated me with a clone, and he has me monitored by these drones. So let's get going. My master wants a milkshake of unicorn jizz ejaculated in an earthquake. Also, he would like a holy grail, supersize it, lay off on the ice so there's more Christ blood inside it. His son would really like some heated baby bones with cheese. And for me, I'll take a hamburger, please. And if you've got some extra souls, I guess I'll take three. One for my clone, one for my drone, and one for me.
Okay, kid. Let me get this straight. You got 125-236-78. Did you bring your reusable dish? If so, just let me know. There's a raffle for a fish. Extra cheese and pepper, please. One baby butter be
was Drive Through, which is now out on Fish Laser Records. And of course, you probably recognize the incredible rap stylings of my dear friend, Johnny Pemberton, also my co-host on The Leather Rose, which is a podcast where we have been exploring the mysteries of the universe. You can also follow Dear Johnny on Twitch by going to twitch.tv/Johnny Pemberton. Speaking of mysteries of the universe, we have a wonderful podcast for you today. This is a conversation that I got to have with my meditation teacher, David Nichter, for his organization, Dharma Moon. It was called Comedy and the Cosmic Giggle. And I love talking to him any chance I can get, but especially when we're doing it for a live audience. It just makes it that much more weird and exciting. We're going to jump right into that, but first, this. My dear sweet darlings, 2022 is going to be a big year for a lot of businesses, but some industries are projected to grow even more this year, like pet services, fitness, digital events and conferences, home improvement, and lots of other things I'm sure that are incredibly weird and hard to understand. Regardless, if you work or own a business in one of these growing industries or a wide range of other industries, you probably need to hire ASAP. And there's only one place to go, that's ZipRecruiter. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Duncan. ZipRecruiter uses powerful technology to find and match the right candidates up with your job. Then it proactively presents these candidates to you. You can easily review these recommended candidates and invite your top choice to apply for your job, which encourages them to apply faster. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site in the UK based on G2 ratings. ZipRecruiter's technology is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And now you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Duncan. That's ZipRecruiter.com/DUNCAN. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And we're back. Hey, if you are interested in diving deep into meditation, learning about meditation, maybe you want to become a meditation teacher yourself, or you just want to work with Nick Turn, whatever it may be, he is offering an insane discount for all of you. If you go to dharmamoon.com/teacher training and put in Duncan450, within the next 48 hours, you'll get $450 off one of their programs. And as always, won't you follow my Patreon at patreon.com/DTFH. Now, everybody, please welcome back to the DTFH. You've seen him in the Midnight Gospel, animated as himself, David Nickturn.
Welcome, and you probably didn't hear Beck's our program coordinator's introduction, so let me just mirror it slightly. We're here tonight doing our first free webinar, which will be once a month series that is sponsored by Dharma Moon, in which we have guests, and the thread is mindfulness and ... So we're a meditation company, Dharma Moon, dharmamoon.com. We have a lot of students here and a lot of friends gathered. And Duncan is one of our best friends and most true friends for Dharma Moon. And he's participated in a bunch of programs that we've done together. And so we're really very happy and kind of tickled, I think is a good word for it, to have Duncan joining us for our first webinar in this series, Mindfulness And. So we called this one Mindfulness and the Cosmic Joke, in our kind of attempt to draw together the notion of some kind of playfulness and humor with the idea of Buddhist practice, which is our unique, that's our unique jag. Some of you might know me with Duncan from his wonderful series on Netflix, The Midnight Gospel, in which I believe I and his mother were the only two people who appeared as ourselves in cartoon form. I was David, the meditation teacher, not a big stretch, but animated version. And I gave his character Clancy, who was in that at that moment in the form of an octopus, meditation instruction.
Yes.
And right. So that was a kind of interesting moment in our collaboration, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah. That was super cool. It was nice turning you into a cartoon.
But we don't own the rights to it, right?
No, hell no. Are you kidding?
We can never do it again on our own, right?
Well, not in that form.
Yeah.
You know, only if Netflix wants to.
Yeah. Well, write to your local Netflix dealer and see if they'll do a retake on Midnight Gospel. Meanwhile, we move on and we're doing all kinds of other things together. So tonight is just going to be a jam, the way we jam. Some of you have heard us on the podcast. A lot of the folks here, Duncan, just are mutual friends of yours and mine. They're people from your podcast who took our Mindfulness Meditation Teacher Training Program. We've got another one coming up starting March 11th, which I'm going to shamelessly promote at some point during the evening. And we're hoping to invite some new folks to come and take part in that. But meanwhile, we don't have a huge agenda, Duncan.
No. No, I mean that. No, we were just going to do a kind of podcast about, maybe some parallels between mindfulness and comedy. Even though anytime you start talking about comedy in a way that isn't doing comedy, you immediately seem like an asshole. So I had some reservations about doing this, only in the sense of like any, like why should I talk about comedy or anyone talk about it? That it's just an it's easier to talk about comedy than to do comedy.
Well, don't you think that's true of music also?
And any spiritual practice.
Well, and sex. Let's include a bunch of other things that it's true of.
It's very hard for me to talk about sex, actually.
Food.
But I mean, I can talk about food. It's easy, when you talk about food, you just seem like someone who likes food. Yeah, but you know what? There is something weird when someone talks about food versus eating food. You
Well,
know, like when someone brings the oysters. Like when someone brings the oysters and tells you the name, like what each type of oyster is, they're like, I don't care. They
Yeah.
all look the same, and you have to pretend like you're gonna remember or something. Like this is a Michigan Shores blue, and this is a Rinaldi. You're just, it's you rather just eat the oyster.
That's a good point. And do you remember that restaurant in Maui, that famous restaurant, which they tell you which fisherman caught each piece of fish?
Oh my God,
What was the name of that restaurant, Monica? Yeah, Mama's Fish House.
yeah, exactly.
And it tells you the name of the fisherman that caught the fish, as if like, oh yeah, I'll have that guy's catch.
Oh, I love the animals he yanks out of the ocean and slices open. You just got a special way of cutting them open.
Yeah. Well, and now this is interesting segue. This is all a way of people building up credentials, isn't it, in a way? Identifying things and making them more familiar to you.
Yeah, I think, yeah, sure. I mean, generally it's like a kind of manipulation from the restaurant if you're talking about like the naming who caught the fish, right? Like it makes them seem, somehow, I don't know, I don't know. It makes you feel a little better somehow because the fish wasn't caught by some anonymous faceless person or something. You get this weird sense of like, okay, this was the right kind of fish.
But just Duncan, in the sense of credentials, you know, one of the things that Trungpa Rinpoche said to us was, well, he had a lot of credentials as a Buddhist master. He was the 11th Trungpa Tulku in a series of teachers.
Yeah.
He came from Tibet, which is heavy cred for anybody studying about meditation. And he said to us, if you had met me in a restaurant, would you still want to study with me? And he wrote a early article called Buddha Dharma Without Credentials. So is there comedy without credentials? What if you never heard of that person? Does knowing who what their credentials are help you think they're funnier?
You get 4 minutes about like. I've, having worked at the Comedy Store for the longest time and having seen like legendary world famous comedians go on stage to work on material, and you get 4 minutes about maybe eight, four to 8 minutes before people stop laughing if you're not being funny. And so that's it, only it works for a second, but generally, like I've, that's what's really beautiful about the Comedy Store is you get to see the process and you realize that. Though you're looking at someone who's spent their entire lives, like being a comedian, when they're in the initial phases of developing a joke, it still won't work sometimes. So the credentials become irrelevant. Similarly, like in sports or whatever, like who cares if you've got credentials? If it's how you're playing that particular day that matters.
You don't think, like, when they always say somebody has like four Grammy awards, and then you go, oh, they're really good. Did you see the Netflix, not Netflix, but the series on the Beatles recently? Did you watch
Yeah,
that?
I hated it.
It's almost there's two groups of people, the people who loved it and the people who couldn't take it. So what about it? Not that we want to alienate, the Beatles particularly, but what
I didn't
about it?
know. I love the Beatles.
Right,
The
right.
Beatles. I didn't not like the Beatles. The Beatles are like a manifestation of Christ on Earth, maybe. But that documentary, it was like somebody had just been snorting rails of Adderall and got on Final Cut and had a bunch of Beatles footage and like threw it together in this really annoying way. No offense to people who loved it. I mean, I have awful taste. I have don't because I don't like something as meaningless. It just means nothing.
Wow. I'll never ask you what you like or don't like again, then.
Please do ask me what I like or don't like. I just think it's good to preface, you know, anytime anyone thinks they have great taste, what's more cloying than that? When you're with someone who's like, no, I've got really good taste, like, shut
People
up.
do say that, though.
I know I mean, they're definitive assholes. Like anyone who says they have good, who anyone who wakes up in the morning is like, boy, do I have good taste. It's like such a duh. It's like, that's the most annoying stance. Maybe you do. I don't know. But I mean, we're living in a, at this point, we live in on a planet where there are so many potential ways of tuning in to reality that for you to imagine that there's some, you know, like middle C for taste and you represent that. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of hubris in that, and you probably deserve to be made, you know, sneered at and eye rolled at a little bit. No
So,
offense for those of you who have great taste out there.
yeah, or even good taste.
Whether it's saving more and spending less, or getting organized, or losing weight, learning how to do backflips, there's a lot of worthwhile goals to set for yourself this year. At the top of my list is learning a new language with Babbel, the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. I'm trying to learn French using Babbel, and the reason I want to do that is so that I can instruct someone in the Parisian catacombs to take me to the place where the MDMA party is happening. Not only is learning a new language a fun and engaging new hobby, you can use it while you check off traveling more from your list. The whole Babbel process is addictively fun, fast, and easy. Babbel teaches bite-sized language lessons for real-world use. It's so easy. If you've ever taken any other language program, then you might have a bad taste in your mouth about learning another language. But clearly, Babbel recruited people who are working at MK Ultra and told them to create a hyper advanced, super easy language learning program that was also as addictive as some kind of synthetic narcotic. Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective, and with Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. There's so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of three. Just go to babbel.com, use promo code Duncan. That's Babbel.com, code Duncan. Babbel, language for life. No
So,
offense for those of you who have great taste out there.
yeah, or even good taste. But in my own way, Duncan, I'm slightly nudging us towards ego, an assessment of credentials of ego and, you know, how people identify themselves. Because the cosmic joke, as we talked about earlier, is, as I mentioned, what my teacher said, is the cosmic joke is actually that you don't exist.
Right.
Okay, so that means all the ways you identify yourself, all the credentials, all the things that you've gathered together as a sense of identity are just that. They're just a bundle. They call it a skanda. It's a bundle.
Right.
So, you know, how do we live with that? Is, do you feel that's true?
Yes, I do feel that's true. I think there's like, that's one of those things you, depending on where you're at in your life, that seems to be like a, either the most horrifying thing you've ever heard or the greatest news of all time, just depending on where you're at. You know, if you're really working hard at being a thing and you hear that, then, I mean, I think that makes a lot of people put the book down right away. It's because like, fuck that. I don't want to mess with that. I'm definitely something. And yeah. So then they don't want to hear it. And, but then if, you know, if you're starting to recognize that just how absolutely calcified you've gotten in your identity, then that becomes like, really, there's something in that that's, even if you don't, reading it isn't enough, but just that possibility is pretty exciting.
So you're somebody, and so am I for that matter, who's functioned actively and also for career in the kind of entertainment or show business world, in which a sense of identity is super important, wouldn't you say? I mean, what's it like being a Buddhist comic? Are you a Buddhist comic?
I wonder about both of those categories all the time. I'm always like, I don't know if I'm either of those things. Sometimes I am, but I don't, you know, one, there's a saying in comedy that I really love. You're only as good as your last set. And I really love that because it's a, you know, every time you go on stage, you're starting over. And I think that's where there's a real parallel between Buddhism and comedy, and you know, that was something that I've learned from you, which I was also one of those things initially when you started explaining it to me, I found it to be really quite annoying, was the idea of disowning the, you know, letting go of whatever the peak experience you had on the cushion and starting again when you sit down, because those peak experiences can really act as anchors. They don't really do much for you. And I know you must hear this all the time, and infinite stories of people achieving some incredible state of heightened consciousness during a meditation session or something. And what I really love about the idea of disowning is like, okay, great, but that's not happening now. You liberate yourself from that, you know, so you're not always constantly sort of trying to be whatever the thing was the last time you were something.
Wait, that's really worth repeating. You're not always trying to be, say it again.
You're not always trying to be the thing you were the last time you were something. And
could we all write that down, please? You're not always trying to be the thing you thought you were the last time you were trying to be something. Could add that in.
Last time you were something. Because, you know, that, and that again, like when you start exploring, you know, Buddhism, mindfulness, meditation, psychedelics, you do sort of have the amazing or terrifying encounter with this. Well, I'm dissolved. You come out of whatever the psychedelic state was, and now you're a thing, but there was a gap, and that's really wild. And so it's, you know, it makes a lot of sense to constantly be trying to like replicate some version of yourself that you thought was happy.
Yeah. That's good.
Cool.
That somehow is saying in a very plain English way what all the Buddhist teachings are trying to say, that you're trying to replicate something.
Yeah.
That's the notion of karma, isn't it? Like it's a replicator and you're trying to create a familiar sense of something, either good or bad. It doesn't even matter if your familiar thing is a shithole, you know,
Are you making fun of my basement?
Well, I don't even know where are you in the world right now.
I can't disclose that right now.
Even the state, you can't even say the state. How about the state of mind?
Oh, I'm in a good state of mind. No, I'm in my base. I don't know why I'm trying to be mysterious. I'm in my garage.
But you work in the studio sometimes too, right?
Yes, I work in the studio, but I wanted to get home to put my kids to bed. I like to read them a story, or read the older one a story before he goes to bed. And I didn't want to be at work all day and miss that. So I came home and went down to the basement to do this, even though it is not aesthetically pleasing at all. It's really creepy down here. It smells bad too. And I lost my smell because of COVID, and it still smells bad here.
You lost your sense of smell in an ongoing way or just for a period of time?
Ongoing. Yeah. My smell has been like oatmeal, pee, poop, coffee, all smell exactly the same.
Wow. I mean, there's a million things, ways to ravel that and unravel that, but oatmeal and poop is where I would start.
Somebody just said, don't get those mixed up.
Yeah, no, that's those two would be, out of the four, those would be the two that would be easiest to mix up, wouldn't it?
Well, thank God I can still see.
Now that's a good punchline. That's that Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder movies. You know, remember those?
Oh,
one of them, one of them's blind and the other one's deaf. I mean, what a great premise that was.
But yes, but you know, I do think that there is something really funny about Buddhism. And I think that's something that if you spend a lot of time with the books and you spend a lot of time, you know, getting into the sort of dense, what is it? I heard Jack Kornfield say, for Buddhist, God is lists. And so you get into like this.
That's funny.
Like,
yeah.
I remember once when I was complaining, I was telling you like, this stuff just seems dry. And you're like, it is dry.
Yeah.
But there is like, that's the sort of like reading the, you know, not to like, that's like reading the ingredients on a box or something like that, you know,
trying
from that to like put together what a cookie tastes like, you know, which is one is very sweet. The other is like cyclorium dioxide, you know, cane sugar, you know, whatever it is in the ingredients. And so the sweetness has within it a really funny quality to it that isn't a cynical kind of funny, at least in my appraisal of the thing. That's a very sweet kind of funny, but yet still incredibly edgy in that we are talking about the sort of possibility that the thing you think you are just doesn't really exist. I mean, that's about it. I don't know of anything edgier than that.
Yeah. And we, you know, at Dharma Moon, we have this Tuesday night gathering that I've been wanting to have you come visit, and you're invited. But it's kind of a little bit of a deeper dive into the Buddhist teaching. So we started last night on the Heart Sutra, the Prajnaparamita Sutra, which starts as it's about 17 volumes called the Prajnaparamita Sutra. Then it narrows down. And then there's one thing called the Heart Sutra, popularly known. It's just two pages of text. And then there's shorter and shorter versions of it. And there's one version where it starts the usual way, thus have I heard, blah, 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 blah. One word.
Wow.
And supposedly there were people who could hear it that way and understand the whole thing without going through the 17 volumes, without going through the two pages. So, and of course, you know, there are sutras in which the Buddha just is holding up a flower. Even in the longer version of the Heart Sutra, Buddha's not even talking. It's his students are, you know, jabbering away in front of him. And then at the end, he says, that was pretty good. You know, so, remember Ram Dass used to just go like, you know, I am loving awareness, you know?
Yeah.
There was something like that of just like allowing yourself to be stiller and simpler.
Well, you know, what a relief.
Big relief.
I mean, that's what a relief. You know, for the dream to work, you gotta be all stuck in a self, you know, and that's one of my favorite things that happens in a dream state where like you're having some rotten experience in a dream state. And then maybe you remember, oh, this is a dream. Mm-hmm. And then the instant sense of relief that comes from that, it's so immense and wonderful. And you wake up with a smile on your face, even though the dream was sort of a nightmare versus like nightmares where you wake up screaming. And I think that using language involving sleeping and waking is the Buddha seems there's lots of ways of communicating the experience that he was pointing towards as being awake. And isn't that what Buddha means, is awakened person, basically?
Yeah, and awakened being even, and or the awakened aspect. It could be the awakened aspect, but it also could be a person has completely manifested that and is that's the space that they're in, kind of settled into it. You know, stable. They call it stable stability.
Stabilized into it.
Yeah, because we all have glimpses, right? Wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But you don't believe them. You're not going to believe that. I mean, that's the problem. It does kind of match like when you start waking up in a dream, maybe, because you can go kind of sort of come out of a dream and then go right back into it again. And so I think something like that is possible. But I think there that sense of a kind of never ending relief. That makes a lot of sense if you've been toiling away in a trying to like replicate what you were a few seconds ago over and over and over again. What a fucking horrible job. No, you're not like, it just, you didn't even apply for the job. At least maybe you did. It depends on what, like, you, what system of metaphysics you want to subscribe to. That's a whole different conversation, but you know, for the sake of this conversation, it's like, you just suddenly you find yourself in you're in a body, you know, and you're looking around and there's all this stuff around you and you're wearing clothes that you picked out a long time ago. Maybe you got some tattoos, you know what I mean? That made sense when you got them and you either
that's a good one too. Maybe you got some tattoos that made sense when you got them.
Yeah. And now you're like, what the fuck did I do? Who am I? What am I? What is this? Like, you know, and those. And so maybe you think when that happens, you're confused or something. And so then because that moment of confusion is so scary, you go back into trying to replicate yourself. You think, oh, my God, I disassociated or something. I remember why I got that tattoo. I got that tattoo because Carla was beautiful.
And the cosmic joke about the resetting it over and over again is that none of it's necessary,
right?
That which is what the ah is saying, is you don't have to do it. But that can easily, as you know, you and I have talked about, dribble over into a kind of nihilistic perspective, right? Then you don't have to do it, and then you go, well, the self is just empty and void. Why should I be anything? Why should I have kids? Why should I treat people well? You know, so that's the tricky thing about simplicity, is that if it's not ripened properly, it'll just turn into nihilism.
You know, I think I'm lucky sometimes to be a comic, and because I can just say things that I don't know. I'm not certified or anything, and it's great. But you know, any encounters I've had with this experience of not letting go of my identity, it doesn't feel, you know, that you sometimes you run into like, I have nothing against atheists. I get why you wouldn't believe in God, and I get it. But sometimes you run into like an angry atheist who just, it's a non-consensual ghost story. You know what I mean? Where like someone's trying to tell you a ghost, like they think it's going to scare you because they're like, no, you don't get it. When you die, you're gone forever. Death is the anesthesia that keeps you away from the pain of life, Richard Dawkins. But they're mad. It's not like they're telling you that, you know, in a way, like in a gentle way. They're generally, there's a kind of weird anger behind it where you're like, look, I didn't write the fucking Bible. Why are you mad at me? I didn't invent God. Why are you coming at me like this? It's not my fault that this thing that you thought, the way you sort of embodied the infinite, it didn't work out for you. But my encounters with that thing that you're talking about, it's always very sweet. And it's always very, like my sense when I've encountered it has not been, I'm going to go around telling people, you know, you don't exist. You're not a you. There's nothing there. It's usually more of after that, you know, just a little taste of that relief or that possibility that this never ending sort of, you know, I don't know. There's so many different ways to put it. It's like being rolled by the most obnoxious wave. Like if you like, you know, when you're surfing, or I don't surf. Sometimes I say when you're surfing, like I surf, you know, when you're surfing, David.
When somebody else is surfing, right?
When you catch that big wave and you're like, well, I have tried body surfing and I've been rolled, and you get rolled by this wave and you're just rolling and you realize like, oh, you want air? Too bad. You're not going to get air because you can't swim up to get the air because you're being rolled by a wave right now. And you're in the ocean's grasp, hopefully you will get up. You just don't know. But it's like some existential version of that, except in this case, the wave is this never-ending series of reactions. And then from those reactions, you get lost in your thinking. And then from getting lost in your thinking, you react in another dumb way. And every once in a while, you might come up for the surface and look around and be like, oh, fuck, I got another tattoo. And then you're back down again, rolling and rolling. So this is a very painful sort of experience. And so anytime you do get that sense of like, wait, I'm coming up for air, I don't know, it usually feels quite joyful. You know, there isn't that anger part. It doesn't feel like you want to get nihilistic with it at all.
Yeah.
Or disregard other people or try to shame them for being themselves or thinking they're a person or anything. It seems to engender a more like loving kind of way of thinking about other people.
Well, you know, emptiness and compassion, they're linked in the doctrine of Buddhism. That's the two elements of Mahayana Buddhism. Isn't that a strange thing to go together? Emptiness, you'd think, okay, well, it doesn't matter. There's nothing there. No need, nothing to get hung about. But it goes, somehow it opens the gateway to compassion. That's really what you're saying. You're saying that actually.
Well, I wish I could pretend that you hadn't already told me that, but I was spontaneously erupting with some kind of like brilliant dharmic stuff. I'm parroting you kind of, but I can say that I have had brushes with this, encounters with this, whatever this is, and that in those brushes with the thing, there's a very sweet sort of warmth to it that I don't really understand at all, but that and you know, in retrospect, whenever I'm thinking about it, I try to disown that and try not to get too caught up in it. And in sitting meditation, I've gotten better and better when that sort of thing seems to be happening. It just, you know, not trying to get too hung up on it, you know. But whatever that thing is, maybe it's a delusion. I mean, I don't know, but I do know that anytime I'm being a jerk, or anytime I find myself like being aggressive or weird, it's 100% the opposite experience. You know, it's coming from defending something that I feel like needs defending, and whatever that other thing is. I mean, once you have sort of let go, well, what's there to defend?
You know, one thing that one of my teachers said is, don't defend yourself. But then he went on to say, don't defend the Dharma either.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's obnoxious.
But that's a good one to put into your snipe and poke it, you know, because we could get caught up with like, you know, kind of zeal.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing. Yeah. You turn into that. You don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
Now what's going on? You've become some kind of weird, but I get it. You know that, I mean, like, God, don't you remember the first time you took acid? Like,
Duncan, I have to think of that. Yes, I do now, but it's a longer time ago for me than for most people here. But I remember totally vividly now that you mentioned it.
Longer time. How long? 4 days.
The first time was, I was a junior in college at Columbia. So, you know, maybe 19 or 20, and I'm going to be 74 next month. So how much is that? 50 years ago?
50 years. That was
good. But I remember it pretty vividly, because one of the things that happened was my girlfriend at the time had a bad trip, and she went into a kind of spasm of fear and anxiety. And I was in no condition to kind of like, okay, let me just ground you here. I'll hold on here. So it was kind of, the trip got aborted at the time. And you know, I don't think that would have been the outcome for me, but through her, I thought, oh, I really need to come down here. I need to be on the ground here, right, to help her to not have a terrible experience. So, you know, that idea of losing your ground can be very easy navigation for some people and much harder for other people, or easy for us sometimes and harder at other times. So have you ever had a bad trip?
I've never had a good trip.
Now that's funny.
Taken acid over 100 times. I don't think I've any of them have been particularly great.
Wow.
No, I'm joking. I think anyone who's you, my acid friends out there, you know what I mean? Like you can have states of ecstasy, but like part of it's sort of an uncomfortable experience. I know for sure, like at least 99% of the time when I've come down, I've thanked God.
Uh-huh.
I've been like, oh, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Yeah. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Oh, God. But also, you know, it's an incredibly enlightening psychedelic. And I love it so much. And now, you know, having some kind of sloppy meditation practice, you know, it's exciting. It's an exciting experience to like every once in a while have glimpses of a place that I thought I could only get to with like 200 plus micrograms, you know, mm-hmm. and that, I think that's kind of the double-edged sword of psychedelics is on one hand, it's like, look here, do you fit, you know, you think you're a you think your identity is something here, try this. And, you know, you will experience some form of dissolution. I don't think there's a way to avoid it depending on dosage, you know?
Yeah. Well.
And yet you still recrystallize, you know? And then of course that place that you're talking about that your girlfriend experienced is the, which I've been to, mm-hmm. is the place where you're desperately just digging your fingernails into like whatever you picture is the thing in front of the abyss that you're getting pulled into. And you're just trying not to get sucked into that, not understanding that the moment that you let go, you're going to have the greatest experience of your life. But that doesn't make any sense at all when mm-hmm. you're tripping, you know, I don't want to die. I mean, I'm sorry if I'm rambling too much about acid. I mean, I thought we were talking about Buddhism and comedy, but anyway, to me, there is that thing that you're talking about, the Heart Sutra, you know, that is this to me, the if there ever was a way to articulate that experience. And I think what's very interesting about the articulating the experience, or in other words, like if whatever the method that you have used to cease to exist, it's only when you stop ceasing to exist that you begin to, you know, the commentary comes from the moment you come back to yourself, you know, when you're
fine. And, you know, Duncan, on the Midnight Gospel, you know, that was such an interesting thing because you just invited me to come in and we started reading some lines and then we improvised a bit. And we ended up in the meditation instruction. I flat out borrowed from Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche. I want to give that accreditation right now, who is a great Dharma teacher and, you know, very fluent in English and Western culture. And he's developed this thing called the three pills, which is silence, stillness, and spaciousness.
Yeah.
If you just take those three pills, like if we don't, you know, I hope everybody can come and take our meditation training and so forth. But if you don't, take those three pills sometime in the next month, maybe take them like for 15 or 20 minutes a day. Maybe you can get more articulated meditation instruction about how to work with the myriad manifestations of your mind that arise during that silence, stillness, and spaciousness. But just leaving some space is so rare.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so rare.
So rare. Yeah.
And being still is rare.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are kind of universal, even if you go into, you know, theistic traditions that have a kind of contemplative aspect, they're still going to talk about those three things. It's not uniquely Buddhist, actually.
Yeah, right. I do you think of Buddhism as a revolutionary practice?
You know, at the time it was. Buddha's time, you know, definitely he was throwing off some, like, for example, he threw over the caste system in his group. That was a big, like, convention. Those were the Republicans of that day. They're going like, yeah, everybody's born with a fate, a karma, a destiny. And he's saying, no way, you can change it. So that's a revolutionary, but revolutionary in relationship to the existing culture. And I think it can become orthodoxy. I've seen Buddhism become orthodox. And it just takes on the same, oh, you know, it's got to be this, you got to do the four this, the three that. So there's traditionally people who come along periodically and just mess the whole thing up and shake it up. You know, and that's what I think all the a lot of inspiring teachers do to different degrees, you know, but it should shake up your concept of yourself. If that's not happening a little bit, and it's just strengthening a concept of self. And I know the formulas, and I know the chants, and I know the sadhana practices, and it becomes a kind of living rigor mortis with a sort of handsome ritual attached to it. I don't think that's what's intended.
That's cool.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Rigor mortis with a handsome ritual attached to it. Well, I mean, but revolutionary in the sense of that. It is in the interest of all the people trying to sell us stuff that we're always moving. You know, there's not, you don't see a lot of, if we're existing in a world where all our data is being being recorded, and then that data is being fed into some algorithm that's then trying to create desire inside of us. And the desire manifests as some fervent action, either to make more money, to get the thing we desire, to get the thing. And especially if the idea of the three root clay, the three poisons, what are they? Desire, ignorance,
and aggression.
Aggression. Yeah. So that means that if something is trying to instill desire in you through some,
algorithm,
then it's literally trying to induce the suffering of desire inside of you. And so when I say revolutionary, I mean anything that is subverting that, the algorithm's ability to implant desire into you, anything that's messing up the way desire works, anything that's even introducing you to the weirdest concept, maybe you can correct me on this, that the within the desire is actually the feeling you're looking for. This messes the whole game up, you know. It really, if the game is, once you go over there, you're going to feel better. Once you have this thing, you're going to feel better. And then there's some method, you can call whatever you want.
Duncan, you know, depending how cynical the wielding of that algorithm is, there's a lot of aggression in it.
Yeah.
So, and I'm thinking right now, really, we're part of a very innovative algorithmic production, which has probably, you're savvy on this kind of stuff, has probably gotten out of the hands of the human beings who created it in the first place already. And like the algorithm, sorry, Instagram, but that's being created on Instagram is, you know, diabolic in terms of trying to keep up with it. Like I've watched when I sort of go through it and how it's responding to me, it's almost like a conversation going on. But it's like a casino. The odds are to the house.
Yeah,
it's not a fair game. It's not like you and I sitting down and playing blackjack. It's the casino is like just needs to win 51-52% of the time, and it's and anybody could win big. You or I could go in and get enlightened, but they go, okay, well, we're just creating a tableau of confusion and also feeding off people's hungriness,
and
emptiness in the wrong way. So. Yeah, so that's a good thing to keep in mind is are we subconsciously participating in stuff? We can't just go with the conscious stuff. We have to look into the infrastructure, the systemic stuff. For a modern Buddhist, I think it's much more appropriate than it might have been to look at the systemic part of the system, part of the samsaric.
It seems like the basic stuff that, you know, Buddha is dealing with, it's just showing up in a technological way. Like, you know, like you throw paint on the invisible man and you see the invisible man. You know what I mean? That's what technology does. It's like, it's not like the algorithm didn't already exist. The algorithm existed wherever there was anything trying to seduce you. The analysis of your, whatever the, you know, how you, since the beginning of whenever, this has been the, you know, any grifter like, takes a look at you and thinks, oh, you seem lonely. Okay, I'll present to you the possibility I can make you less lonely. Or, oh, you seem hungry. Maybe I'll trick you into thinking I can get you more food. Or, oh, you seem greedy. I'll make you think you can be rich. Or, oh, you seem worried about your health. I'll make you more worried about your health and then pretend to be a doctor. Like these things have been going on forever. It's just now an AI has figured out how to do it. And, you know, it's doing it with sadly more precision. But and the what to me, like one thing that would completely destabilize that thing's ability would just be a simple. Dissolution of the self. I mean, the thing depends on like having some like desires something you're afraid of. You know, I get these pop-ups sometimes that's like symptoms of hepatitis. Just shows some guy holding his leg. And I'm like, oh my God, I held my leg the other day. It hurt. Do I have hepatitis? You know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. Like it's either trying to scare you, make you hungry. You know what I mean? But all those, these are these poisons that are elucidated in Buddhism. You know, they're being elucidated because of the possibility that there is a way for them to no longer cause suffering. And so that's why I think it's a revolutionary practice, not revolutionary in the sense of like overthrowing the state necessarily, but revolutionary in the sense that the gears of society, as we understand them, the flow of the economy depends on people subscribing to the idea that upon attaining this thing or that thing, they will experience peace. I mean, it's the most satanic thing of all time when you think about it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Athletic Greens, for supporting this episode of the DTFH. Not only that, but thank you for sending me a vitamin that I can finally take regularly. I'm not a vitamin person. I'm not good at it. I have friends who are vitamin people, and they carry around big, embarrassing Ziploc bags full of vitamins that get them searched at airports and just make them seem generally insane. Not to mention every once in a while when they forget to eat, when they're taking their zillion pounds of vitamins and end up exorcist-style projectile vomiting half-digested vitamins all over their Uber. They have to pay a cleanup fee. And also, they have to be the person who puked because of vitamins in an Uber, which is pretty depressing when you really think about it. Anyway, Athletic Greens is wonderful for a lot of different reasons. Number one, with one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. All the things. Again, why do I use Athletic Greens? I'm not a vitamin person. It just doesn't work for me. I try. I'm going to start taking vitamins. It doesn't work because you have to keep track of the packets. This, you just drop in a scoop and you're done. It makes me feel better. It gives me energy. It tastes great. And they sent it to me in this wonderful ceramic container. So I also don't look like those people who have those nasty, big, like, ape barrels, like something you would see in a zookeeper throw to pigs on top of their refrigerator, stained with like protein spray. It looks really good. That's what I mean. It's easy to travel with, and it's just easy, and it makes you feel fantastic. Also, it's got over 7,000 five-star reviews. It's recommended by professional athletes. It's trusted by leading health experts such as Tim Ferriss and Michael Gervais. It costs less than $3 a day, and it supports mental clarity and alertness, which I could definitely use more of. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading right into flu and cold season. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills. No need to look like you're some kind of 60s speed freak when you're taking vitamins. It's just wonderful supplements to help you look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Duncan. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/Duncan to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Thank you, Athletic Greens.
Well, It's so nice to have all these folks present with us. So if I could.
Hey, David, what's the difference between a chickpea and a garbanzo bean?
Oh, geez. One is a blither and one is a blither.
It doesn't cost $500 to have a garbanzo bean in your mouth.
I didn't see it coming. I feel like somebody just threw a pizza in my face.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, that's probably a perfect segue for the mindfulness meditation teacher training program, which I just wanted to say a couple of words about. And since quite a few of the folks here are regulars, it's nice. First of all, it's great to see everybody. And it's also kind of cool to see some of the new folks. But we've been having at Dharma Moon a training course called Mindfulness Meditation Teacher Training Program 100 Hours. And I'm going to be very brief about that. It starts March 11th with a weekend program that you can take as a standalone. So maybe, Beck, you can put that in the chat first so people can see it. And with a full 5-weekend program that is over about 4 months. And quite a few of the Dunkites, we call them Dunkites, Dunk. And there's a lot of Dunk.
These are
dunky,
not my
Dunky friend. Energy. What's that?
These are my friends.
They're yeah, they are. Well, but I'm just, I have to give them some acronym, otherwise it's hard to identify. And it's, we have one starting, and then there's a early bird on it till February 10th, if you want to jump in. If you want to find out more about it, we'll put the link in the chat. And we're hoping that you can at least come and check us out. We have an info session on February 2nd, if you want to come to that. And it's a great gathering, just like this. It's not as different from this as you might think. We do get precise about talking about meditation practice and mainly teaching other people how to do it well.
That's what I love about you. That's one of the many things I love about you, David, is that you're so precise. And it's like your inability to like completely diverge from what could easily turn into some kind of, you know, boring, sanctimonious, too strict thing to like going into the outer realms. I don't know how many times you have completely pulled the rug out from under me in the most subtle way where you're an amazing teacher. And I hope people will take your class.
Thank you, Duncan. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, it's a funny thing. All we're left with is a beating heart. All the logic falls away. All the rationale falls away. Even the sense of relativity falls away. And it's so sweet for me to hear you say that. So thank you for saying that.
Thank you.
And, you know, that's the atmosphere that we've been able to create in this pandemic. We've been gathering people together just like this and saying, okay, it's hard to gather right now and keep our spirits up. So we created Dharma Moon, and that's only purpose it has. You know, it's we're trying to keep it connected and on the ground and operational. And a lot of people are working very hard on it, but we're not trying to make some kind of like, you know, super techno AI driven meditation app that that helps you sleep better. That's the irony to me, is we said Buddha means awake, and then a lot of the apps are like how to get a good night's sleep, which is good. Buddha said you should get a good night's sleep, to be fair.
Really?
He did. And you should eat well, and you should take care of yourself.
That'd be really weird if you said you should never sleep.
Well, some...
The religion, let's face it, the religion wouldn't last that long.
Well, you know what? There are famous Tibetan teachers in the last century. I'm sure there are some yogis in the hills now. There was a teacher named Tulku Ujin Rinpoche, very famous, highly realized Ati master, who sat in a box. They have a meditation box, and he did not lie down to go to sleep. He might have maybe dozed off a little bit. But, you know, and as you said earlier, the dream states are viewed as another opportunity to practice in more advanced practice. So the lucid dream that you had is something that can be cultivated. And when you cultivate it, you also develop the ability to see the illusory quality of daily life.
Do you think anybody ever opened the box not knowing?
No, the box he's
somebody
open.
Was in there.
No, he's sitting there. It's just this, and people are coming in all the time, and he's teaching and transmitting, to people.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
it's not a closed box.
No, that's called a coffin. That's a different thing. Yeah. No, it was just a kind of level of discipline that I've seen, Duncan, with my own eyes, with some of these people. That is out of the range, of what we think of as cultivation. It's like 100%. There's no kind of holding back. There's no doubt. There's no sense
of alternative.
I'll
take not exploding in rage in traffic.
And you know what?
Maybe a few incarnations down the line, I'll be the grumpy, non-sleeping box dude.
But the people who did sit up like that, they say, don't blow your cool in traffic. That's that teaching, look at the Dalai Lama or something like that. That's mostly what he would say.
How much traffic do they have to deal with if they're in a box all day?
Well, you know what? There's mind traffic, and it's the same. You've sat, meditated. How much traffic did you deal with while you were sitting and meditating?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? It's
worse, right?
Traffic's not even the right word for it. Yeah, it's just, you're right. No, exactly. No, you're totally right. Of course. Yeah. And I'm obviously, I don't mean a blasphemer. What was his name? I feel... Clearly, that's an aspiration to get to, I guess.
And you'd have to, experience teachings from somebody like that. His name was Tulku Ujin, U-G-Y-E-N. And he had four sons who are wandering the earth now, teaching one of his Mingyur Rinpoche, who's a very famous teacher.
Oh, my God. I just made fun of Mingyur Rinpoche's dad. Great.
You did.
Oh, my God.
But none of them would mind. I think you're okay because we're not in Catholic school right now.
That's true. But still, I love him so much. I can't believe. And I remember him talking about his dad and being like, wow.
Yeah, his dad was like a real yogic adept. And,
But where do they get the box? Do they?
No, it's just like, just has a back and sides. It's all in the cushion in it. So when you're sitting, if you lean back a little bit, you can just kind of relax a minute as opposed to sitting in full present meditation. It's just, there's a less of a differential between sleep and awake.
Okay, I got you.
And they say that great masters can kind of meditate 24/7. Even in a physical sleep, their mind is awake. But right. We're not, as you said, we're just trying to get to the point where we go like, could I understand the foundation of my own grouchiness?
Yes.
And maybe could I give my family and friends a break without being too harsh on myself in the bargain?
That's where I'm at. That's exactly it.
Me too. Exactly. That's where I'm at. We're at the same place.
So the box is like a chair.
When your cushion is the box, your chair is the box. That's right. And you're in it for 20 minutes or 30 minutes. Gotcha. But the principle is the exact same. The mind is coming up with stuff and you're learning to not to fixate too much on the content, but return to the ground of awareness that's generating the content. Isn't that our meditation, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, and yes. And what I find really interesting about it is what you just said and all the various things that you might hear if you study Buddhism. It's so interesting over the course of practicing it, though, those sentences, like, I don't know how to put it, but they change, like, not like, you know, that you're understand. It's interesting the way something so simple as, the cause of suffering is attachment, or there is suffering, right? Like something so simple as that, over the course of like working with someone like you or having some kind of practice or working with any of the awesome teachers out there, I don't know. It's interesting how those ideas become sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. You know, they go from being these kind of boring, like, what does that even mean? Or infuriatingly simple things to see me. I don't know how to put it. It gets sweet so far. I don't know if it stays sweet. I'm sure there's something around the corner that sucks, but it seems very sweet.
You know, it depends what you experience and what you've been told and what you feel is possible. But from my perspective, it gets sweeter and sweeter.
Cool.
And the reason is because you're just fighting it less and less, and you're allowing people to be who they are, and you're allowing yourself to be who you are. and it's less ambitious, and it's less greedy, and it's less goal oriented.
And
you know, there's a lot of things to say about it, but that's enough said. And I think the main thing is that our experience learning how to sit for 20 minutes a day is not that different from what we're talking about with somebody who's a very accomplished meditator sitting in a box 24 hours. It's the same process of tuning in and working with the mind.
Right.
And opening up the gateway beyond habitual patterns so that you can be kind to people even when you feel a little grouchy.
Yes, that. I mean, that's all, to me, that's it. That's it. That's all that matters. I'm a dad now. I can't be like a grouchy, like awkward, mean person anymore. I just can't.
Well, and your mom was so sweet.
Thanks.
I mean, I at least from that episode, she seemed like a very wise and kind of realized person.
Well, you know, I think she had a practice, and you know, I think that that's one of the things that happen when you have a practice is that when you're dying, you know, when you listen to that conversation, she was dying, actively dying, but that, you know, all that's left is the sweetness, you know, that it seems like, and I think maybe some people when they're dying, they get scared, or some people when they're dying, they get really pissed off. I mean, I've heard you die like you live, like you sort of relive your life in the days leading up to your death. And so, you know,
for anybody who hasn't seen Midnight Gospel, watch the 8th episode, which is Duncan and his mother very close to when she passed away. And man, that's transcends the genre that you, it's so cool because you set us into a genre which is kind of rapidly moving and shifting and changing. And that one at the end, you just cadenced with the kind of most tender part of the journey.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah.
It was a lot of people read that, understood that.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks.
So I see some questions coming in about the teacher training, and Beck, I'm wondering if you can put the link where they can email. If you have any questions about the teacher training or Dharma Moon in general, we have a website, but we also have a email address. Beck, are you still here? Could you just say the name of that address?
Oh, yeah. I've already posted it twice in the chat. The email is assist@dharmamoon.com.
Yeah.
ASSIST at dharmamoon.com.
And the thing about that is that I see people having questions about, you know, when is it? And could I get a scholarship or a payment plan? And all you need to do is write in there. We try to make it so that people can come if they want to come. So please feel free to write in there if you have any questions. And Duncan, I thought maybe it'd be fun to open up the mic a little bit and see if anybody has anything, you know, thoughts or questions they want to share. Is that cool?
Yes.
Okay. So remember, I see people are ready to go right away. So Beck, you want to moderate?
Sure. I'll be happy to. Let's invite, let's see here. Vivian, go ahead and unmute.
Well, I feel like I just raised my hand. Some other people had their hands up before me, so I'm gonna have them take a shot before I go.
Okay,
that's sweet.
Yeah. That is very sweet. Yeah, just a whole bunch of them popped up at once. Let's see here.
Oh, wait, Eric. I'm sorry. Can I interrupt? I'm so sorry.
Sure.
I don't think the Instagram people are going to hear these questions.
I'll repeat the question. So okay, if you great. Could, yeah, that's, boy, savvy there.
the so Zoom Instagram is people, asking questions now, y'all.
Yeah.
Instagram. Yeah, and, ha.
I'll try to repeat the question, but that would mean, can you make it concise if that's possible, not go on too long, and then we can share it. Okay. So,
all right. How about go ahead. Yeah. Eric and Nell.
Okay. Eric and Nell.
Hey guys. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. We're big fans. So quickly, I just have a question. Duncan, earlier talking about like getting, you know, when you're serving, it gets down in the waves. We call it the washing machine. It's like that pattern, that cycle.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering, what do you guys do to like break that pattern, right? Like, what are some things? I mean, obviously sitting, but and that's working for me in my life. But
Okay. Let me pass that question along.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
If I can just no make worries. It concise like that. Okay. So the question is from Eric and Nell. And the question is, when you're getting washboarded in that way, you know, as a metaphor, what are some things you can do to change the pattern that's locking you in there? Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. What are some of the things you can do that's a good question, Duncan. What are some things you would do?
When I'm surfing, depending on the wave, of course, I've surfed some pretty big monster waves headed out. Actually, no, I am. I'm flying out tonight to Antarctica. There's a big swell out there. Ice surfing is what I'm into. I have a grappling hook. I keep it on my back. And so if I get rolled, I throw the hook up. I've got a trained team that like snatches the hook, attaches it to a boat, pulls me up. With the meditation stuff, I really don't think I have a good answer. I don't have a good answer to that. I've learned from David though, that the sort of the futility of trying to stop it. And I've heard Jack Kornfield say, the mind makes thoughts the way the tongue salivates. So, you know, it's like, how do you stop your tongue from making spit? How do you stop? It's like, so, and I think there's something in the consideration of the entire process of thinking, including the emotional continuum too, which in Buddhism also gets noted as thinking. There's something really great about sort of disowning the idea that you own the thoughts or the feelings, that this is even you, and allowing yourself the fantasy that this is just a kind of, you know, it's like you can have a particularly vile thought and spend days thinking to yourself, my God, what's wrong with me? Like, why did I think that? And completely forget. It's not like you were sitting around like, God, please let me just think the most horrible, shitty, rotten, disgusting thought that anyone's ever thought in their lives. It's not like you ordered it or something and your subconscious like, oh, I've got something really good. Here you go. It just pops up. And then you get caught up in judging yourself for having that versus like other forms of flatulence. You know what I mean? You forget right away. You know, some vile burp or something. You know, you have a particularly disgusting burp. You're not talking to your therapist like, oh my God, it was so horrible.
Duncan, if you had given him a really simple answer, what would it be?
I would say, touch and go. The Chogyam Trungpa idea, touch and go, you know, which is, it's sort of like, this thing isn't about necessarily like suppressing or ignoring, but rather, yeah, there's the thought. And then let it, that's it. It's gone now. And then there's another one and another one and another one and another one. And somewhere in this sitting practice that I've had, there's at the very least a recognition that these things can't be quite as important as they're making themselves out to be. If there's so many of them and you don't even know when they start or end.
You know, there's a Mahayana slogan, the Lojong slogans. Duncan, have you looked at that ever, Lojong?
Yeah, I've just been getting into it lately.
Oh, good. Auspicious. So there's one that says, change your attitude and relax as it is. Just relax as it is. And it's not the kind of relaxing where you go to sleep exactly, but you go with the energy of the situation more and you stop fighting. And that's a good instruction for real life and for meditation practice. Just relax. That, in fact, that's actually a very advanced instruction. You can't really say that to a beginner because they'll go, what do you mean? You know, I mean, but relax a little bit. Like it's not the, that syllable ah is the essence of letting go in that way. If you make that sound, there's a lot of space, you know, more than we're comfortable with sometimes. So why don't we see anybody other questions?
Thank you. Long days, pleasant nights.
Yeah, thank you.
Great meeting you.
Thank you. Okay, how about Nick Burr? Go ahead and unmute.
Duncan, do you know Nick?
Oh, no, he doesn't. Not now.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, how's it going? I've been listening to your podcast. You introduced me to David without knowing it. For years, you've been a little Buddhist earworm. So I guess my question's a little interesting. I'm in David's meditation teacher training course. And earlier you were talking about how Instagram and like the algorithm has become just like a...
Nick, remember the people on Instagram cannot hear this. So if everybody can be concise, I know that's challenging. Just a concise thing, and then I'll pass it through to them. Yeah. Thank you.
So the algorithm is like desire and a lot of passion and aggression. So what if you do? What are your thoughts of trying to make an AI that cultivates precision, gentleness, and letting go?
Okay, so friends in Instagramville, interesting question from our friend Nick, who is taking the teacher training program right now. We're having some great questions coming from him. What are Duncan's thoughts about creating an algorithm, as long as we're in that space, that is structured to cultivate the qualities of gentleness, precision, and letting go, or something actually beneficial, because the algorithms are sort of organized on a different premise? What about doing that? Any thoughts, Duncan?
What a great question. Wherever there's a thing, its opposite could exist. And I think lots of people are stumbling on this possibility with that, with like, oh, right, the algorithm doesn't, it's doing what the code is telling it to do. It's doing this sort of corporate manipulation in with varying degrees of sophistication. So maybe there's a way to make it, to turn it into something that's actually, like what you're saying, doing the opposite. The sad answer I think would be the reason the algorithm has been trained to do these things is because it's making billions of dollars for corporations. And so, you know, I think it's going to be like, I think we can predict something like a more peaceful algorithm brought to you by Citibank. You know, some kind of thing like that. You know what I mean? Like, there's always going to be, it's something really interesting, isn't it? Like the way that the, whatever the thing is will almost instantaneously, the moment it enters into capitalism, it gets warped or it gets, branded or something like that. But I think, you know what? It is a possibility. I think what you're talking about, it must be a possibility. And I think in all the scary talk about AI, what you're talking about gets completely left out, and that there is an equally positive. If there's like some horrible possibility from any technology, then it's generally that technology could be used for something incredibly beautiful, and powerful, and transformative. This is, you know, I know you've heard this idea that a lot of the technology that we're enjoying right now in the world started in the military and then, you know, it was advanced by people trying to figure out better ways to kill people. And then it, you know, we're using that stuff. So, yeah, I think I hope it happens. I can't wait. Maybe that's the Maitreya. Maybe the next Buddha is just an algorithm or something, you know, or some kind of AI that imperfectly embodies the Dharma. Who knows? Why not? Can robots get enlightened?
Thank you.
Cool question. Do you have any thoughts on that, David? Do you think robots can get enlightened?
Yeah, it's sort of an interesting... I mean, Duncan and I have kidded around, or not so much kidding around, about like each one of us, they develop a 2.0 version of Duncan. And then people would rather go see the 2.0 AI in the club, and Duncan's playing at the club next door with three old ladies drinking a beer. I think the problem is pretty simple, which is disembodiment. That's what I see as something that is probably not going to lead to the result people want. because the body, in at least from a Buddhist perspective, and I think other traditions, is the seat of wisdom. Oddly, it also gives us the most pain, the most problem, and it's also the most impermanent aspect, obviously impermanent aspect. But it seems like when you meet somebody who's got wisdom, it's embodied. It's in the way they walk and talk and communicate. And we're moving into a disembodied universe. That's what I think. I don't think it's necessarily, maybe there'll still be ways for people to connect with their bodies or leave their bodies completely. I don't know. But the body is one of the three sort of seats of wisdom in terms of the way Buddhists have traditionally thought about those things. And that would lead to a serious disembodied kind of quality.
But David, wouldn't you say that if you are someone who's completely trapped, if you're someone who's completely reactive, if you're someone completely functioning by this basic coding mechanism known as the three poisons, what's the difference between you and a robot anyway? What's the difference? In fact, wouldn't you say anyone who is purely reactive is essentially mechanical, that when you find yourself hyper-crystallized in your karma, what to the point where you're not even aware that you aren't your thoughts, you're running on autopilot. You are sort of a robot.
Well, wouldn't the modern koan would be, does a robot have Buddha nature? It used to be, does a dog have Buddha nature? Does a robot have Buddha nature? You see people vetting that in science fiction movies. Is there some point at which, you know, digital organism could be, you know, be sentient? There's a lot of current science fiction that pivots off of that. So the short answer is, I don't know.
Yeah, that's definitely the right answer.
Yeah. But it's thank you for asking. And maybe we could take two more
questions. Thank you so much.
Okay. Great. All right. So two more. All right. Let's hear from the ladies. Vivian, are you ready to ask your question?
Hello, everyone. Hello, Duncan. Hi. Hello, David. Hi. Okay, I wrote down my question, so it goes by real quick. But just want to say, I took the teacher training course. It's really good. One of the texts we go over is the wisdom of no escape. And the three themes that we really talk about is gentleness, precision, and letting go. And my question is about letting go. So when you experience a really good joke, you know, there's, you know, you start to laugh, and that peak of that laughter, you've lost complete control. Like, that's a form of letting go. And like, I'm wondering, because you're a, you know, a comedian, what your thoughts on that?
So can you ask that? I want to repeat it for the Instagram folks. Can you ask it in one simple question?
Humor has a magical ability of allowing people to let go. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay. So what Vivian's asking is, humor has a magical ability to help people to just let go. And any thoughts from Duncan about that?
Well, great to meet you. I think in really great comedy, and you do see this, there's a Buddhist idea of poison into medicine. And so quite often you will see, you know, I mean, I can remember watching Richard Pryor do a joke about after he burned himself, I think from smoking crack, how painful it was to have the skin taken off of his body from being burnt. And it, the way he was so funny that the way he if someone just said, you know, yeah, a couple of years ago, I had to go in the hospital and I was badly burnt from a cocaine addiction and they scraped my flesh off and it was the most painful thing I ever experienced. Nobody's laughing. That's the most horrible story. And yet, coming from him, somehow everyone's just laughing. It's so funny. And somewhere in that laughter, I think what you're talking about is a sort of the experience of all that suffering being alchemized. Something is happening there that's more than a joke working or something. You're witnessing I don't know what it is, some kind of magical thing that's happening where you're in the moment, this thing that's the most awful thing ever, and this person's vulnerability and artfulness and ability to express it, they're not just transforming their own suffering into something that is, at the very least, it's making people laugh at the most, it's embracing the reality of human suffering as a whole, you know, and the possibility that even with that suffering, there's still the ability to alchemize this, so many rotten things about the human experience into something that makes people laugh. Maybe that's too complex a answer. You know, with God, I'm so bad at talking about comedy. I don't know, but I do know what, I know that experience that you're talking about, and being in an audience and being caught up in like that moment is just so healing, so weirdly healing. It's so precious to say that, but my God, I've walked out of good comedy shows feeling like, you know, great for days. Like, so yeah, whatever that is quite powerful.
And where are you when you're experiencing that? Where are you?
So he's asking, where are you when you're experiencing that? If those folks on Instagram couldn't hear it, where are you?
When you're lost in laughter, where are you? Well, I mean, I think we're going to have to do like the Ram Dass level thing, aren't we? Like, you know, clearly hopefully you're wherever you were when you started laughing. Hopefully you didn't laugh yourself into evaporate yourself. Though I got to tell you, that would be an incredible night if you told a joke that made the audience disappear from laughter. But
Duncan, wouldn't it be funny if like the Heart Attack Sutra, you know, when Buddha taught that, some of the people died. If you're in a comedy club and you guys often say, I killed tonight, but actually people died in the audience from laughing.
Would
that be good or bad?
The worst night of your life.
if they died laughing?
Well, for one, it's like going to mess up your show if someone in the middle of a great joke keels over. Now where are you going to bring the audience back after they have to haul someone out? David, yeah. I don't want anyone to die during a show. That would be rotten. Yeah. That's not, but I know some comedians have died on stage.
Oh like, yeah?
I, oh
in
yeah.
In the middle of a set?
Absolutely. There's video of it online. You can find it. Like a British comedian. People just kept laughing. They thought he was doing a bit. I know but I take the other, I think it's a really great question. And I think there's a lot of answers. I would like to imagine, I like the idea that maybe if in that moment where everyone's laughing and truly laughing and lost in the laughter, maybe you do sort of become temporarily part of everything. Maybe there is a universal sort of shared experience of laughter. I don't know. It's a great question though. Where are you when you sneeze?
I think there's something about that in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It says where you are when you see, of course, Douglas Adams came up with that.
Duncan, sorry to interrupt, but we lost you on the Instagram feed. I'm not sure exactly why, but let me see if I see.
I don't know. You have to re-invite me. I think it just kicked me because I'd been on it too long.
Oh, yeah. Is that right? Edward, any idea how we can get that back?
I think you just have to re-invite me.
Okay.
Or you might have to let go.
I think that's going to be hard to do with everything that's going on here. Let's see if it's... I'm re-inviting you. Let's see if that works. If that works, we'll go with it.
Uh-oh. I'm back.
You're back. Okay. Thanks, Monica. So great. That was, this is the first time I've ever done Instagram live. So excuse, any, obstacles that we've encountered that way. So I think at this point, sorry, I know there's folks who have questions and I see Puccini in the audience and that's like, you know, I want to ask about some of those operas, but I think
let's do one more.
Okay. Let's do Puccini then. And since Puccini, are you there? I don't see your, visage.
Oh, yes, thank you, Vivian.
Thanks, Vivian. Great meeting you.
Puccini, you're the last one to speak, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
And if you could keep it concise so I can repeat it for the Instagram folks.
Yes, of course. So,
thank you. Yeah.
I think my question kind of, it's very related to what Vivian asked. And my question is just, how do you let go of the past when you've been living in the past for so long? I feel like
great.
I feel like if
Yeah, that's so good. Can I just go with that, the way you just asked?
Yeah, of course.
It's
simple
and elegant and to the point. So what our friend is asking is, how do you let go of the past when you've been living in the past for so long? Okay. Yeah, that's powerful. Yeah. Donkey, you want to take a shot?
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay.
It's I'm going to give a rotten answer, though. You have to look up Marcus Aurelius. He did this. There's an essay he wrote about this very thing. And it's people who are worried about dying, actually. And he was making just an incredible point, which is bad news. You can hold on to the past. Like, the idea that you can let go of the past implies you can hold on to the past. And that idea has within it this tragic conceptualization of everything that happened before now as being a thing that you can hold on to. It's gone. I mean, at least as far as we're concerned in this place that we're in, the bardo of becoming, it's gone. There's no way to get it back. It's just gone. You can't hold on to it. And so that's the good news, which is you actually haven't been holding on to the past at all. What you've probably been doing is habitually remembering something. But that's not the past. That's just some kind of neurological echo of the past, which usually, and also if you look at the memories that you're having of the past, they're not that great. If you ever go that far with it, where you're like, let me just look into these memories that are haunting me so much. I don't know if you ever do that, David, but like memories are at least, I mean, I don't know. I've been doing drugs since I was in the ninth grade. So my memories are particularly like just, you know, when you old film, muddy, grainy, stuttery, big, those burnt spots in them. They're not, also, I don't think they necessarily match exactly what happened in the past. And
well, and Duncan, there's one thing you said that could elaborate on a little. It actually isn't the past. The memories of the past happened in the present.
Right.
And my suggestion to Puccini is, Puccini, do you practice meditation?
Not as frequently as I would like, but okay. Would like to.
Dr. Nickturn is prescribing take 2 sit pills every day and call in about a week, because in the meditation, you're performing a simple cleansing ritual of recognizing that those thoughts about the past are actually in the present. You can see that. And you're actually also putting energy and discipline into bringing your mind and your attention back into the present in the form of the experience of breath or whatever you're using. And it's a gradual shift. Like a muscle, you have a big muscle that's used to thinking certain thoughts that are dwelling in the past. But if you, every once in a while, when you notice that, you label thinking, now you're bringing your attention back to the present, like right now, right, Puccini? You're not in the past right now, right?
Yeah, exactly, because I'm very concentrated on what you're saying.
Exactly the point. So he's not in the past because he's concentrated on what we're saying. And instead of us having to be there talking at you all day long, you can just use your own breath, your own posture, your own body, and come back. But it takes cultivation. And that's what I think why we're advocating mindfulness meditation is it builds up a kind of strength of coming back into the present. And you can do it, Puccini. You can definitely do it. I'm just going to tell you flat out, you can do it. And we'll help you. We'll help you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. I'm a big fan of both of you. So that means a lot. That means a lot.
Great to meet you guys.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm from Colombia, so
okay. Are you there
fans
now?
All over the world. Yes.
Okay, so cool. Puccini, everybody is in Colombia right now, not Columbia University either. Talking about the country.
Yeah.
So I think, unfortunately, I apologize. That's all the time we have for Q&A. We should, you know, spend the last 5 minutes just closing up the container, in a kind of So I want to just say a couple of things. I'm choked up a little bit, Duncan. I love you, and I'm so happy to have you here doing this with us. And the kind of conversations we've had have been rare, like rarefied atmosphere of like having fun, goofing around, and really getting at the true meaning of stuff.
Well, so, I don't take them for granted, David.
So on behalf of everybody at Dharma Moon, I want to thank you for being part of the ecosystem and such an important part. And also, you're honest. You know, I don't meet a lot of honest people, actually. And so I want to also thank the Dharma Moon team. You don't see them, but it takes a lot of work to put these things together. And we just got the Instagram feed working at the 1 minute to seven. That was a lot of people leaning in, working together. And so I know we're reaching quite a few people in the Instagram world and in the Zoom world. This recording of today's talk will be available to you. So if you just have registered for tonight, and you could probably go do it right now if you want, go to dharmamoon.com. There's a banner on the top and you register. We will send you, email you a recording of this evening's exchange. And so we plan to do more of these kind of things where we can just talk maybe a little bit less formally about these things. And I want to remind you that if you're interested in getting involved with this community, which is burgeoning at the moment and growing with a lot of heart, even though it's all online, it's just stunning to me. I wasn't sure we could pull it off, that it would still have enough heart to be worth the effort. But people are really connecting and connecting with the Dharma in a real genuine way. So just go to dharmamoon.com and all the you know information you need is there, or write to assist at Dharma Moon. And Beck, is it assist at Dharma Moon or assist at dharmamoon.com?
Assist at dharmamoon.com.
There you go. That's your ticket to ride. We have some, Beck and Renee are there and they'll write back to you. And
Beck! Go back. Sorry.
Is that a dog, a cat, or a child?
My gimp. Who
is it?
I've got a gimp, David. I got in a. I keep him down here. I'm so sorry. Go back.
Igor.
It's making it impossible to do podcasts from down here, honestly.
Yeah. Well, and also for those of you, I think most of you do know Duncan, but you should check out his. When I need a laugh, actually, I like to listen to Duncan's podcast, and sometimes the podcasts themselves are funny, but the intros are always like laugh out loud stuff for me. And also, he's a cool musician. He's making the musical intros. And
I'm working on learning music right now.
Yeah. So hopefully you can visit with Dharma Moon and with Duncan Trussell for the foreseeable future. And we'd love to hear from you. And thank you so much for coming, everybody.
Great meeting you all. Thanks for having me on, David. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay.
That was David Nichtern, everybody. All the links you need to find David or to take advantage of that awesome discount using offer code Duncan450 in the next couple of days will be at DuncanTrussell.com. Thank you to our sponsors. And thank you all so much for listening. I love you, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend. And if you really want to listen to that drive-through song again, it'll probably be sitting on my SoundCloud, and the link will be at DuncanTrussell.com too. And thanks to Johnny for helping me with that thing. All right, bye, y'all. See you next week.